Okay, welcome along to Under Construction with Chadwicks. I'm Donal Callaghan, and later we are going to be hearing from Kieran from Saint-Gobain in our Suppliers Corner. But today our focus is on International Women's Day and attracting more women to the construction industry. I am delighted to be joined by Tara Brennan. Tara, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I should highlight your role, marketing and digital strategy within Chadwicks. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Very good. And we're also joined by Joanne Tracy, Director of CIF. Joanne, how are you?
Great, thanks, Danica.
And also Shauna Doyle, the Tarmacking Mama. What a brilliant title. Can you tell us a little bit about your social media platform?
Yeah, I just like to show that girls can do it too. I drive a paver, lorries, laying tarmac.
Shauna, where can people find you on social media?
The Tarmac and Mammy on Instagram and TikTok.
The Tarmac and Mammy. Get your phone out now and start following Shauna. A brilliant follow. Good on you.
Thank you.
Okay, Tara, I'll go to you first because I know this is an issue and a topic that you're usually passionate about and something you're really driven with.
Yeah, so in our industry, I think the average percentage is about 9% female in construction. In Chadwicks, we are a little bit higher, but I suppose that's because we're not out in the cold, we're in an office. But we do have a lot of work to do. And it's really important that we attract more women to the industry because it's such a small pool at the moment. And, you know, struggle for talent is out there every day and you don't want to be just pulling from a 50% of the population. So it's about attracting more women and how we can do and what we can do for it. In Chadwicks, we're focused on trying to work flexible hours. We pay full maternity pay, you know, surrogacy pay, all of that type of thing. But it's about once we can attract them, people tend to come in. But it is a little bit tricky.
Thanks so much for joining us today because it is an important topic, isn't it? And it's right we chat about it because, as Tara mentioned there, Joanne, 9%. Overall isn't great numbers.
No, absolutely not, I suppose. And it is, look, it's a challenge in general getting, I suppose, attracting people into the construction industry full stop, not to mention the small percentage of women that are coming into the industry. I think that, I suppose, from my perspective, a lot of it has to go back to our school level and trying to educate more and show, I suppose, girls in secondary schools what careers are available. It's not all about muddy boots, but some girls, you know, but it is, that's a massive part of it. Remote working, you know, I'm sure Shauna will talk a little bit more, is a little bit more difficult when you're dealing with site work because when you're on site, you have to be on site. You can't really work remotely.
Yeah.
But there's loads of other jobs and opportunities in the industry that, like, you know, are so accessible for the, both girls and boys, you know.
Shauna, you might take us through, one, your role, but two, your social media profile, because it's really lit up for you.
Yeah, so I am working with my family business doing tarmac. Like my day-to-day kind of thing, I'm out on site. Mm. So everyone kind of presumes that I work in the office when I meet them, but that's very rare. I'm always out on site, laying tarmac, getting jobs ready. And I'm just trying to show on social media that girls can do it too.
Yeah.
So just trying to get it out there, like if you can see it, you can be it.
But Shauna, that's the exact point. We've seen it in sports, just everyone talking about visibility, seeing it more and more often. And you being out there in your boots doing it is really important and using the vehicle of social media to highlight it.
Yeah, I really do think so. Like I've got two kids and I find even collecting them from school in my work gear is showing the little girls and junior infants like this can be done. Do you know, from that age up, I think it's so important to be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And Shauna, you transitioned from the beauty industry to Tarmac Academy.
Yeah.
What was people's reaction when you told them what you were
That's
doing?
That's a normal crossover, is it?
It makes no sense even to me.
It's all fillers.
Yeah. I just say I can make anything look good. Usher, look, my friends were like, what?
Yeah.
Like, because I am the ultimate girly girl. So like, it doesn't make sense, but I love it. And yeah, I wouldn't change it now for anything.
But Shauna, you can be the ultimate girly girl, can't you?
And
do this role. That's probably what we probably need to chat about more.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you can be girly and do these jobs, you know. Like, you don't have to be, like, you know, in like even into sports, things like that. Like, you can be into anything. You can do anything. I think it's important to show that.
Yeah. And Joanne, how do you find working in a predominantly male-dominated industry?
it's different. There's pros and cons, like everything. But I, for the most part, I think it's much easier. Maybe I'm allowed to say that. Yeah. It's just about getting things done. You know, you might have, you can talk directly. There's nobody kind of thinking, you know, what's the hidden meaning behind that conversation? You know, you just, you say something, someone might disagree with you. You might have a disagreement and they move on and it's done. It's, you know, okay. it's done and dusted. So for the most part, I have no issue with working in a, in a male-dominated industry, but equally, you know, I like to be fair. Well, I hope that my female work colleagues don't think that they have any issue working with me either.
Yeah. But is that because you've created a good environment in CIF? That, you know what I mean? It's not gender. It's just a proper working environment.
That's it, and that's about balance. And I think it's you know, within CIF, they are very focused on the kind of the inclusivity and trying to make sure that there is a balance. And, you know, we had a little, I suppose, conversation before we started the podcast here about, you know, how many, I suppose, females are working within CIF. And there's actually, surprisingly, probably more females working within CIF itself than there are males. Wow. Whereas, and even at senior level, at director level, there's a pretty much a 50-50 balance. Whereas in a previous role, you know, in a company that I was in, it was entirely male-dominated director team. And, you know, I felt, I suppose, it was very much a glass ceiling within that. Yeah. And I think that that's probably a concept that could be still out there.
Yeah.
That we have to remove. We have to open up the doors and, you know, we're so capable. Women are so capable.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and we need that balance. Like we need the male input and we need the female input because we both have a lot to offer.
Yeah. And Tara, to you, like you're seeing this daily, not only with your own work environment with Chadwicks, but on the floor as well. You know, it must.
Yeah, I mean, in Chadwicks, it's very particular to roles. So, in particular, if you look at a lot of our roles in the branches, for example, you're outside, you're outdoors. Their general operative is that role, and that is about 20% of our work population, and the majority of them, I think we have about 2 females now. And it's just, that's the role that's tricky to fill.
Yeah.
You'll see more behind the counter. So you wonder if that's just girls have been brought up to go, no, you don't work outside. And like I say, it goes back to the schools. And we did some research a couple of years ago, and it's very much, there's very little about the trades in schools. And when it is, it's more architecture and engineering. So it's what young girls have been taught, and we need to change that mindset, like I say, at a school level. So when it comes to these roles, I mean, you know, actually working in Chadwicks, you're out and about, you're outdoors, but it's fixed hours, you're not working late.
Yeah.
And it is it's a really good place to be, but it's just about encouraging more females to get involved.
Yeah. If we're trying to attract people, because we were chatting about it earlier on, less people in the industry in general, it's very hard to get the crafts and the trades. But if we're only picking from 50% of our demographic, you know, we're not going to have proper representation at all. It is a great area that would lift everything in the construction industry.
Yeah, like we find getting staff at all is hard. Like construction isn't real. I don't know if it's just not really encouraged. I think when you're in school, you know, you're kind of pushed to go to college or go to university along those lines rather than, like, I still think they're not pushing people into trades, and like tarmac, and you don't even get, there's no apprenticeship.
Yeah. Okay.
So we find it very hard because, like, at one stage they would have relied on lads coming out of school that didn't want to go to college or, you know, further education. They were happy to go out and work outside and, like, not afraid to get dirty. Whereas now, in general, it's hard to get anyone.
Yeah.
And then encouraging women into it is another thing altogether.
There's definitely, I think, sorry if I can butt in there,
yeah,
there's
no,
definitely, I think, a little bit of PTSD from the crash, and in terms of, you know, people going into the construction industry, and especially, I suppose, at a generational level where we'll say we have parents who have kids now coming up through secondary school who would have been,
yes,
stung by, you know, the crash,
of course,
and,
yeah,
you know, when the bottom fell out of everything and people suffered a lot of loss around that time. And the construction industry was probably, you know, I'm sure your family, Shauna, probably experienced,
yeah,
that. The construction industry was like the first really to be impacted. And there's a lot of fear about, okay, well, what if, you know, we go into that, you know, career choice again,
yeah,
and there's that happens again, or there's a huge,
yeah,
fear. And, you know, ultimately, we've mentioned the schools, but like parents are the biggest influencers of where kids are going in terms of their career choices, you know, and we need to kind of get into their mindset too a little bit.
Well, that's interesting. I would never have thought of it being like that, that kind of fear factor from what's gone before and the perception maybe in parents' minds.
Yeah.
Sean, I go to you. How did that go down at home? Like Tara spoke about it, schools maybe were not encouraging as much, but how did you find it at home when you're saying, I'm going from the beauty industry and I'm getting on the boots and I'm digging in?
It took a little while. So like I have brothers and I have a cousin, like a male cousin, and they're not really interested in the business. So I did say to my dad when I was on maternity leave with my little boy, what's the plan going forward? You know, what is your plan for the business? Who's going to take it over? And he just said, we don't really have a plan. No one's interested. So we'll just keep going till we go. And I said to them, like, I'll take it on, you know, kind of in a jokey way, kind of not. And it was left at that for a little while. And then my dad and uncle asked me, are you serious? Do you want to try? Yeah. But the deal is I had to learn from the bottom up. So I've thankfully been very well received in that sense. But it's a family business.
Yeah,
so I don't know if it would be different if I just went home and was like, I'm done being a beautician. I'm going to become a tarmacker. Do you know, like,
and is that a word?
Tarmacker. Do you know?
If there's no link, I don't know how easy or like well accepted, not well accepted, but how open people would be to it.
But I think people would be open to it for exactly the reason you said, that you went in and learned it from the bottom back up.
Yeah.
You weren't kind of coming in on the family business from on top.
No, yeah.
You went back and rolled up your sleeves.
Yeah, that was the deal from day one, was that I had to learn from the bottom up so I know exactly what goes into everything, like for a pricing point as well as the respect of the lads that have worked there for like 20, 30 years. So that I wasn't just coming in being like, I'm, you know, the boss, whatever,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So I'm still, yeah, I'm still learning, sure. I'll be learning forever.
But that's all of us. But it is a great way into leadership. I just know from my time in sport, if you see someone coming through, we kind of say that we're earning the right.
Yeah, yeah.
It, like you're shoulder to shoulder with everyone there. You're there because you're the best, not because of family or whatever it is, or gender or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting though, but going back to the comment you made, Joanne, in relation to parents, we do a lot of work with the TUD in terms of apprenticeships, and our CEO would be out talking to parents and, you know, they're like, oh, absolutely, I wouldn't want my Johnny out in a trade. Yeah. I think the one thing we do struggle with is the perception that if I go to college or if I don't go to college, I'll miss out on the social aspect. And, you know, I've listened to a few podcasts over the last few days in anticipation of this one, and that seems to be the biggest thing. Well, I do college for a year or two first, just so I have that social bit and all of my friends are going. And then, and it's then they don't realize, they realize this isn't actually for me and I want to do something else. University isn't the only option because some people just don't want to do it. Like the Limerick Hurlers we had in, we never went to college and, you know, perfectly happy doing what he's doing. There is a different road for everybody and apprenticeships is certainly one of them.
Is it educating parents then to that aspect?
Absolutely. I think we need to educate parents. We need to be getting into schools. We need to be getting the parents into schools at these careers fairs and, you know, saying, okay, well, you know, these are the opportunities. This is what could happen. And a lot of crafts, I say there's trades and crafts. I know it's kind of the technical description, yeah. But you know, a lot of them come up through their apprenticeships and essentially, like, how many of them are essentially entrepreneurs ultimately, because they end up, like, you know, starting their own businesses, you know, in, as you said, your family business, Shauna, like it's a craft, the tarmacking, that has ultimately led you to have a successful family business. And these are like skills that we all need.
Yeah,
you know, we all rely on. Nobody can get a plumber these days. Nobody can get an electrician because they're all in such high demand.
I'd say you'd be very surprised, though, even the example you gave of you rocking up in your work gear after work, for all the boys and girls to just see that as normal. You know what I mean? Like, social media is great and they give you the exact demographic and stuff like that, but they can't take into account someone seeing you and saying, yeah, I want to be like that in time.
That's it. Like, I love that my kids would never find it unusual to see a woman on a building site.
Yeah.
And even when we're at jobs, doing someone's driveway, and you see the little ones out the window waving and delighted that there's a woman, and like, they'd be calling me Wendy, you know, from Bob the Builder.
Not a bad
all
name.
All sorts, yeah, look, I'll take it. But Bob the Builder was a hell of a
guy. Yeah, yeah, no comment.
But yeah, no, I think it is good to be seen out like that.
Yeah.
Because it is rare, definitely.
Joanne, will you take us through some of the strategies you've put in place, you know, around getting more inclusivity around trades?
Yeah, so I suppose there's a lot
crafts.
Of... camps.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, listen, I'm biased.
No, just, I like crafts because it credits the work.
Well, that's kind of my concept about it as well.
I never thought of it like that.
It's kind of, it gives... I suppose it complements the skills that they have trained and qualified to be able to carry, you know, to carry out. And yeah, so that's kind of why I like the term craft.
Yeah,
I think it's a little...
There's two of us in the bowl.
I'm in.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Crafts all around.
Excellent, excellent.
I'm an electrician crafter.
Yeah, craft, yeah. But just like, you know, that's a craft. Like, you know, well, I certainly wouldn't be like to, you know, go out any wires and think that I'm not going to electrocute someone. So look, yeah, within CIF, we have a number of campaigns. We have a careers in construction campaign where we go into schools and we ask for members' support. We also have a Safe Pass where basically CIF support up to 20 students in a school to complete their Safe Pass training, which is essentially your ticket to work on a construction site. Okay. And it's a 4-year qualification. So a school can apply through CIF to become eligible to have that training completed for up to 20 of their students. That's been really successful in a couple of schools. They've come back the following year saying, look, you know, that went down so well with our students, and we'd really like to, you know, if you could come back. And we're some of them in disadvantaged areas where they've seen the benefit of the guys and girls getting this ticket to be able to go and maybe get a summer job on a construction site or whatever the case may be. So that's worked really well. So, and then outside of that, I suppose we're just constantly promoting. We are using social media. We're trying to I suppose, get the voice heard. We obviously are massive supporters of International Women's Day as well, and hold an event. I hope I'm not allowed to say that kind of, you know, as part
plug
of...
Plug away. We're always plugging.
You can edit it out if it has to be edited out.
Not at all. Keep going.
But yeah, so there's, and it's sold out. Like weeks ago, the in-person event is sold out. It's going to be in Castleknock. So there's over 400 people who have booked to attend that in-person event, and it will also then there's more opportunities to attend it online, and it's been hugely successful the last few years. So look, there's it's really just communication. It's really pushing the information out there. That's the best we can do. You know, we just have to keep repeating the same story and hoping that it's going to keep, you know, pick up momentum and keep going.
Well, it's great that you're putting processes in places to kind of get the word out there. I must say, Sean, I'll go to you on it. Tara, I didn't know that stat, 9%. You know, like, would you have felt there was that much of a minority from you being on the ground and seeing things? Like,
yeah, I would have said it was even less, you know.
Genuinely.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've only ever run into a woman on site once. That's it. In the whole 7 years.
And I think you're right in terms of on the ground. I think a lot of that, so if you think about Chadwicks, for example, we fall into that category, and we'd have about 20 odd percent female in our business, but it's different. There's support staff there, there's office staff there. So that's probably why a lot of our colleagues are doing those roles rather than out on a site.
Yeah.
So I think if you actually went and tried to measure the exact percentage of females on sites, I'd say it's an awful lot less.
Yeah, yeah. I would, absolutely.
Because we had Kate and Amy on last year's pod, and they went through some of the kind of barriers, the things that make it really difficult. And some of the things that came up were bathroom facilities and even clothing. They're just finding appropriate footwear or just work gear to do your job right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm the same. Like, the workwear I wear is men's. I'm lucky I can get it that it does fit right and that.
Okay.
But it's not women's. Not like none of it is... especially for women. It's all men's wear, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to sort that out after the show.
No, Tara, with you, I've no doubting. That's absolutely. And yours will have a cape.
It will. You will have a cape. And the bathroom is just a no-go area. That's just, yeah. Like, you know, most people they're like, when they think of going to a festival and going in a Portaloo, they're like, oh my God, awful. Like, if I have a Portaloo, I'm delighted.
Yeah.
There's like, so, like, majority of time, there's none.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that is not been harsh, but that's such an easy fix, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. Like, where I work for, like, such a small business, really, and it's family, like, I can just say, all right, I'll be back in a few minutes, you know, and go down, find a service station or whatever. But yeah, other than that.
That's what the girls were saying, Donica, wasn't it? That they actually had to walk or go off the site to find something to come back. So yeah, it is, you know, it's extra time and then people are wondering where you are. And yeah, it's a tricky one.
Mm.
It's disappointing, Joanne, to hear that that's still a barrier in 2024,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely, it is. And it's actually, like, it's actually really disheartening.
I find it a bit embarrassing.
Yeah,
I
agree. I agree that, like, we're here and we're talking about trying to make this more inclusive environment for girls to come and work in. And we're saying that we don't have welfare facilities that can, you know, that they can access while they're doing their job. And that's just basic. It's just basic, you know, that we need to. And as you said, Donica, it is an easy fix. It just means that, you know, we just, it needs planning and it needs somebody to be thinking, maybe, you know, a female to kind of be up there at the top saying, you know, these are simple things that we need to put in place. And, and
Joanne, I don't want to go away from the topic, but recruitment, how has recruitment changed, or just even things you would see from that side of it?
So I suppose my background before CIF would have been in HR. So I would have been heavily involved in recruitment. So I know, like, how difficult, you know, it has been and continues to be for companies to get good people. And I would have always said the right person for the job is I know it has to be gender balanced, but I think it has to be the right person for the right job. But, you know, I suppose historically recruitment would have been an ad in a newspaper.
Yeah, okay.
And there are still certainly roles and areas within Ireland that would still be the best place to advertise, you know, for, you know, because there are still a cohort who aren't online, who aren't looking at social media to see what jobs are available. But for the most part, recruitment has evolved massively and it is now social media. It is about, you know, I suppose, branding, company branding, making people feel that they can relate to what the company's doing. You know, it is, I suppose, the really just the communication element has changed dramatically, I suppose, in how we're advertising and how we're promoting careers. That it is equally, I think, word of mouth. I think that because, again, it is very difficult to get people for jobs now and to recruit within the industry, a lot of it is coming from, you're finding people through either someone that you've worked with before or a referral from someone that you have working for you that knows somebody. There's a lot of that is I suppose going on too in terms of how people are finding jobs now.
Shauna, would you find that you'd hear of a role and you might know someone and you're perfect for that? You know what I mean?
Like, we do, like, majority of the time, if we were looking for someone, it would be kind of asking the lads, do you know anyone? Or it is more word of mouth. Again, because it's not an apprenticeship or, you know, like, we have to train the person up from the bottom up as well with anyone, unless they've done tarmac before. But it's not something that you're qualified for going into the job.
Yeah, okay. So you learn it
as you go.
But Joanne, you're right. You have to do it quite young. My little girl, Sophie, started into secondary school. But even the choices for subjects, like tech drawing is one of them, but it mightn't have been there a few years ago. But even just having more diversification of subject choice because you mentioned teaching or nursing, whereas are we holding them back by not broadening out the curriculum for all?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
I was the same in school. I think at one stage I said I want to be an interior designer and it was just like, no, like, no information on it. Don't know. If you want to do that, you may just go about it yourself. And that's not even, like, that's kind of more of a nicer side of construction, you know?
Yeah. I did graphic design in college. I didn't do anything related to construction. I fell into construction.
Literally. No way.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's how a lot of females probably end up in the industry, unless they're coming from possibly a background where there is an influence at home, maybe where there's an engineering background, or in, you know, as in your case, this term, I don't mean, there's another girl I know in construction. She's from Carlo Lisa Kenny. She's in plaster, but she went back and qualified as a QS. But she became a plaster because her dad was a plaster. So there's a lot of kind of, you know, family influences there that are kind of driving it. But I would have a similar experience to your daughter now in terms of my nieces. They're in a school in Cork City, and I think tech drawing is possibly the only subject that's on the curriculum. And I know one of my nieces is doing it because she wanted to do home ec, but the class basically list filled out and she didn't get into the top the list or whatever, so the default was tech drawing. So she's in it by default. Now she's enjoying it now, but she would never have chosen it.
Shauna, you mentioned if you can't see it, you can't be it. But you're three of you are living proof of it in the industry and doing really well. But what bit of advice would you have to someone probably listening in, or someone young, or even chatting to yourself about getting more involved or taking on a craft?
I think even just being open-minded to things from a young age is important. And like, it's hard though, because it like, how can you be open-minded to it if you're not aware of it or that's even a possibility? I just think if it's something you think you might even like, go for it. Like, you can always try something else.
Yeah.
And I think girls would be surprised how well received you would be. Like, I have had very few bad experiences, do you know? Like, it's a majority of the time, like, everyone on site, like, I'm obviously the only woman, so every man there, they'd do anything to help me. Like, if they see I'm struggling with something, someone will help me. And if I ask for it, it's, of course, you know, like, it's not, there's not a bad, well, from my experience, there's not a bad, like, acceptance of you being there or anything. I've had good experiences, thankfully.
Joanna and Tara,
I suppose from our perspective, we probably have a bit of responsibility to promote it on our channels. And if you'd looked at what we were doing a number of years ago versus now, we are trying to get more women involved in our ad campaigns and our social campaigns, and actually not going to try and find women, but actually using the women that we have in our industry. I mean, one of our reps over in Steel, the longest serving one, Bernie, hope she was my mate, she's there years and she's a fabulous rep over in the steel industry, and you don't see many women in steel. So we do have them, and it's about promoting them. And what we did find is, you know, in the last season of the podcast, we were trying to get a lot more women on, just in terms of a bit of balance. And while they were out there, some of them were very reluctant to get involved because they felt that, you know, they might get some negative comments on social and, you know, they're a little bit intimidated and, oh, what would she know? So it's about us building that confidence within the women in the industry. And so we are trying to do that as much as we can. We're trying to find the Shaunas of the world. And hopefully, you know, if people listen to this, they might drop us a note. And I feel like we might have to set up a little, might share some of the contacts we have with Shauna so that there's people out there.
Yeah. Joanne, same.
So based on what Shauna and Tara have said, like, it's, I know we've said if you can't see it, you can't be it. But let's say if you can see it, you can be it. So let's put more out there. And I think as like, let's like really promote Shauna and promote like every other female in the industry that is doing that practical work, that is making it, you know, making it real for it's, you know, I suppose the younger generation, I sound like an old one now, but the younger generation are all about what they can see now, because it's everything is in front of them. They're on the social media all the time. They're looking at, you know, TikTok or, you know, whatever, I don't know, Snapchat and whatever.
Now you're showing your age.
You're bang on. Yeah.
what's hip these days? But like, so yeah, they're like, it's really just putting it in front of them. And, you know, as I said, if you can see it, you can be it. It's sad that we still, as females, have the imposter syndrome, you know, as Tara's kind of referred to there, like that women are almost afraid to put themselves out there because of, you know, especially in the construction industry, that someone will say, but you're, you know, what do they know? But we just, I suppose, maybe have just support each other and have a bit more belief in our own.
Yeah. On that point, you know what I mean? So it involves a certain resilience to, you know, sit in the car and go, chest out, I got to go in here now and take this on. So that does show a kind of values and characteristics of yourself in terms of best bits of advice you would have got. Or is there someone that stands out that always had your back to tell you, yeah, back yourself, go there?
Well, I think, I suppose, from my own personal experience, I would have had very supportive parents. Now, they wouldn't have come from an engineering or construction type background, but they always instilled, you know, you can be anything. You have the ability to be anything you want to be. Brilliant. And I think that while, you know, I wanted to be a dancer.
Oh, yes.
Now, my mother wasn't, you know, exactly pushing me down that route. Bar a dancer. It was kind of like, you can be a dancer after you go to college and do something else, you know?
Okay.
So
yeah, exactly.
I never went back to dancing, obviously.
There's time yet.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
With Carl Mullen in, if that fella can dance, anyone can.
he wasn't willing to let go of the trophy, though.
No, he never knows.
I know I've kind of contradicted. They still had the belief that I could be and kind of, you know, just be anything that I wanted to be. And I had, in fairness, I've had good champions in the workplace too, despite, you know, feeling at times that, you know, there was a glass ceiling, you know, in relation to my own progression in places. I still, within, you know, that company would have had very supportive work colleagues and bosses that would have equally supported me in my journey. And when I decided I was leaving, them were very supportive in the next step that I took, which was to CIF. I think I've been lucky.
Yeah.
You know, but I still, it doesn't mean that I wouldn't have the imposter syndrome and have the fear factor of like, oh God, what if I say something wrong?
Of course,
like, what if, you know?
Well, the stats prove it, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shauna, for you, you know, best bits of advice, champions, people you had around you?
Yeah, like, I'm lucky. I would say my dad and my uncle, like, they're the bosses. They've pushed me, really. Like, at times, I remember I was only a few weeks in, really, and driving one of the machines with my uncle, and he, like, there's switches everywhere. There's, you know, it's massive. It's the paver that lays kind of roadways.
Okay.
And him saying to me, come up here now and sit with me because you're going to be driving this one day. And I was like, no way. There's not a hope of it.
Yeah.
And now I'm the paver driver.
Yeah.
And the same with lorry, things like that. Like, they've pushed me a little bit, whereas I would have been like, nope. Never going to happen.
That's a green shoot, like, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because something clicks with you. They planted a seed there.
Yeah. And now it's nearly the other way. They'd be like, there's no way you're going to get the lorry in there. And I'd be like, I will. Do you know? Like, now I'm the other end of it.
You
and I proved
careful.
Them wrong.
Yeah, they'll be calling you. Will you back in that lorry in there?
Oh, God. Yeah. I'll get myself in trouble.
Yeah. What about you, Tara?
I suppose similar to Joanne, my parents would have been very much, you can do whatever you want to do. Mm. And when I transitioned to Chadwicks, I don't even remember having a conversation around diversity at the time because I'd always worked in industries where it was kind of 50-50. So it was a bit of a shock to the system when you go in and you're a lot of the time the only female in the room. And I know we've spoken a lot about, you know, schools and girls and making them aware. But I live in a house with all men. I have three sons, even the dog is a boy. So I think for me, my challenge is to make them feel comfortable and make them aware that girls are just as good as boys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's probably more important in terms of education than some of the young men, that this is acceptable and this is the way it should be. So while I don't have any girls to educate, I'm working on that. And, you know, when I go to work and I have my hard hat, my high vis, my lads don't think that that's unusual. So
yeah. I think that's such a key point. It really is. It's education both ways that, you know what I mean, that we're all in this together and we have to kind of see it from both sides, and you doing that with your lads is an incredible way to do it.
Yeah, it is.
Hats off to you on that, for definite.
Yeah,
because
in a house with all the men.
that aside, God, there's a lot of cleaning up. Well, actually, there shouldn't be, because they should be doing it like the same. But this is the whole thing. It should be the supportive, the supportive environment that we should be kind of nurturing for the, you know, I suppose the boys to grow up feeling that, like, it's not a difference between a girl's job and a boy's job. You know, everybody should be doing the same kind of, you know, to help each other out. And that, you know, that women going out and it's not taboo for the woman, the female, to be the breadwinner.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I was at an event a couple of years ago and the speaker was there to talk about surrogacy and how she had to, you know, freezer eggs and all the rest so that she could progress her career and kind of, you know, how you manage that.
Yeah.
And when she got there, someone called her and said, I'm really sorry, there's not very many women, it's mainly men. And she was like, well, that's exactly, because I don't need to talk to the women in the room. They know what the problem is. I need to talk to the men in the room. So it's just about getting that balance. It's not just women talking to women. It's, you know, everybody needs to be educated in terms of females can work in any trade or any craft.
Yeah, we had one of the speakers at IWD last year, actually. She's an exceptional, she's an engineer, and both herself and her husband worked full time. So they had a rule, they had a 50-50 rule in the house with regards to the kids. So all the work was 50-50-50. They split, you know, one person cooked three nights, the other person cooked three nights, and then they maybe did a takeaway on the seventh night or whatever. But everything was 50-50, down to if the kids got sick. If they got sick in the morning time, she had to stay at home with them until lunchtime, and then her husband would come home. And if they got sick in the afternoon, he would have to leave work and go and collect the kids. So she used to actually, by her own admission, she'd say to them if they were feeling unwell in the morning, she'd go in until lunchtime. And there you go. And if you're still sick, bring
there's
your dad.
That's brilliant.
But I thought it was brilliant. Like, you know, there's ways of getting on, making all these things work. But it's just the 50-50 thing. You know, it's about, we need to kind of, I suppose, be nurturing that more too.
I never really thought, I think about things, but the PTS from what we went through, like, it was such a dark time and everyone is a little bit scared about it. And maybe we are carrying the baggage of that, not only parents at home and schools, which we chatted about, but everyone in general. Maybe we need to change how we look at the whole construction industry.
Well, look at Ireland now.
Yeah,
I mean, it's all you have to do is look at how many cranes are up, or how much construction is going on, or how much building is happening, and like it's case in point. Even go down to the fundamental. If you do, as we said earlier, if you're trying to get a plumber or an electrician, you know, you can't get them at the minute because there is so much going on.
Yeah,
you know, that's just, I suppose, it's really kind of basic indicator of we're doing okay.
Yeah,
you know, Ireland is doing okay, and there are plans, thankfully, you know, in place from the government that will ensure that the construction industry is going to be doing okay for the next long while, because it has to, because we have to build houses and we have to build the infrastructure to support, you know, the
I think there's checks and balances in place now, so we're not going to have the boom and the crash that we had last time. So it is a lot more of a stable industry to come into now. There's not as much risk.
Yeah.
Shauna, you're on the ground with recruitment. Yeah. Tell us how you're finding it.
We definitely do find it hard to find good staff. And the thing is, the majority of our staff are a certain age. And even I was on a CPC course last week, which is what I have to do every year for the lorry. Just to do one day a year, like kind of safety training. And the guy running the course, I think there were 16 on the course. He asked, how many here are under 40? I think three of us put our hands up.
Stop.
Do you know? And like, I think that's the case with a lot of the construction industry. I think however hard it is now to get a plumber, in say 20 years time, when the kind of older lads now have retired, what way is it going to be? Because I think it is getting, like, it is just getting harder and harder.
Yeah. Joanne?
I think one positive figure in terms of craft registrations last year, they were back to they're actually up 20% on the 2019 figures, which we would use as the benchmark because it was the pre the pandemic.
Yeah.
So in terms of craft registrations in 2023, they were up 20% on 2019 figures, which is a really positive sign.
Okay.
But there are, all the wet trades are really struggling. You know, it's you know, your bricklayers, your painters, decorators, your tilers, they're you know, unfortunately, really, like, almost, they're kind of falling into negative numbers almost. But you have your electricians, your plumbers, and your carpenters, they're shooting up, you know, they're the top.
It's amazing you say that, because all the sports people, especially the hurlers, I'm going back to the hurlers, but they said that there's been a push away in their dressing room from the crafts, the trades, on that side of it. And maybe it is that kind of physical side of it. Would you think that, or is that changed, or is that yet again another perception?
I suppose I hadn't heard that. I'd say they're more likely to get injured on the GA pitch now than they are
to be
hurting themselves, or, you know, to be too physical. I mean, the whole sports side of it is so physical now that they have to be fit, and you know, and it's quite demanding. I live in, I suppose, in quite a rural part of Ireland now, and have done for the last 5 years, and I think there's definitely, from what I've observed, more emphasis on crafts from in rural communities than there are in city communities. I grew up just outside Cork City, so I think I have a fair benchmark, you know, to compare. But you know, my husband is a crafts. He's a fabricator, and he started out. He went out on his own in 2020 in the pandemic because he was laid off because of the, you know, what happened. He was laid off for 6 weeks, and he said, "If I don't do it now, I never will." He went out on his own. He's now got like eight guys working for him, including two apprentices. You know, so like he's a success story in terms of and he's giving opportunities to others, and you know, including the apprentices. So it's not an easy run. It's a hard job and it's a hard graft, but there's lots of good stuff, you know, with the seeing, you know, being able to, you know, Sean, I'm sure like when you're doing your work, you can see immediately what you're doing. And it's a massive sense of satisfaction, I'd say, in actually being able to see that.
Yeah, you can see it happening like right in front of you. And it's so quick sometimes as well. And even just being somewhere different every day, it's hard. Like it's hard being out when it's cold, but then you're out all summer. So, I wouldn't change it now. I wouldn't. So,
Sean, if you don't mind me asking, you're on the ground though. You're probably seeing that physical side of it. How do you find it? Is it as labour intensive, or are the hurlers gone soft?
Oh, well, tarmac is definitely labour intensive. It's very physical. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the majority of the work we do is wheeling wheelbarrows of tarmac. When we are laying the tarmac, getting the jobs ready is a lot more like digger work, and you know, is not quite so full on. Well, it is, because if you're laying curbs, they're heavy. Do you know, it is a hard job.
Yeah, it is a hard job. Yeah. But you learn to do it right.
Oh, yeah.
And
like,
so capable.
Geez, I remember my first day laying tarmac, we did the smallest job and I was bet.
Yeah.
Like I sat down and I was like, how do you do this every day? And like, it was tiny.
Yeah.
Do you know, when I think of the jobs we do now, they're huge driveways. And yeah, you're bet at the end of the day. But it's like when you go to the gym, you don't start lifting the heavy weights straight away.
Exactly.
You build it up slowly. Yeah. And like, I'm by no means fit. I've slowly built it up, do you know? And I could run wheelbarrows of tarmac all day, but don't ask me to go for a run, like, do you know?
Well, you can have a wheelbarrow race with Donegal.
I was just about to say, you sound perfect for Ireland's Fitness Family. Oh, I've an application form here if you wouldn't mind filling it out.
There's one ahead earlier.
Guys, I must say, a great conversation, a great chat. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today on Under Construction, I'm sure. And there was an awful lot of insight into it. Joanne, Shauna and Tara, thank you so much. Also, thanks on behalf of a dad of three girls for ye to be showing the way. They, like, it's always referred to in our house, the kind of Elsas, you know, someone that's out there, and the Annas that are out there showing the way, their own little superheroes. So on behalf of a pro dad, for them to look at the three of you at the top of your game in your industries, thank you so much for joining us today, and keep it going.
Thank you.
Thanks, Danica.
Welcome back to Under Construction, and it is time for our Suppliers Corner. Thankfully, Patrick is here to bail me out again. Patrick, how are you doing?
I'm all good, Danica, thanks.
Yeah, you are excited about this one. We are delighted to be joined by Kieran Houlihan from Gyprock. Kieran, how are you?
Very good. Thanks, Danica. Nice to meet you, lads.
I'm only after copping on. There's been a bit of history, lads, in the past, is there?
Yeah, we've a good history.
Yeah, we do.
I think one of the, it goes down as one of Patrick's best ever decisions, was he hired me back in the day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so back in the day, I would have been marketing director of the Gyprock business. So, yeah. So I worked in Sangoban for quite a few years, yeah.
Yeah, so he recruited me and then he left.
Okay, well, that's the beauty
decisions.
Of not a bad way to do it. Kieran, you might take us through a brief history of Gyprock.
Yeah, thanks, Seneca. I suppose Gyprock are part of the Sangoban group, but Gyprock on its own, we're manufacturing in Ireland over 80 years. With factories outside of King's Court in Cavan, mines in County Monaghan, offices in Dublin, supply all the Chadwicks branches around Ireland. And 80 years in business, it's a long legacy. And then we're part of a global group, which is Sangoban. Saint-Gobain are in over 70 countries, make everything from glass to insulation to plasterboard, huge array of materials, 160,000 employees. So it's a massive group to be part of. And the benefit to us locally is that lots invested in R&D, lots invested in product development and construction technology. So yeah, around a long time, but always change and always trying to change. The next few years, plenty of change ahead of us.
The big area of conversation at the moment is sustainability, be it in the industry and outside of it. You might tell us a little bit of how you're...
It's a great topic, Donica. It's a huge topic. We'd probably spend this session and many more on it. I mean, the construction industry needs to go through a major revolution and wants to around sustainability, as does like every kind of industry, be it food industry. We all know the huge targets Ireland has to reduce its carbon emissions, and construction has a large part to play in that, both the buildings themselves and the materials that go into the buildings. I suppose from our point of view, we're a material supplier, so we're a big part of the construction supply chain. And it's very important then, as a result, that the products and systems that we supply to the tradespeople out there are more sustainable into the future. And really the journey we're on, like lots of suppliers and like lots of builders, how do we do that? How do we do that efficiently and still maintain performant products so that we have buildings that are safe, comfortable, great to live in, whether you work, schools and all the rest. So the big challenge is exactly how the construction industry is going to embark on that change.
Yeah, and in fairness to, you know, companies like Saint-Gobain, particularly Saint-Gobain, I would say going back much longer than most, they led the sustainability agenda across the, certainly in the Western world. And I think we've been beneficiaries of that through Gyprock in this country.
Yeah, there's big steps and companies have to show leadership. If we're going to get there, there has to be a couple of front runners who are willing to make the investments and willing to make the chance, take the chances and show the way forward. Recently, in the last two or three years, I've seen a net carbon zero plant open up in Norway for plasterboard for the exact same products that we make in Ireland. So that's kind of like a big R&D. It's a big experiment for us to kind of go, okay, what worked, what didn't work? How do we retrofit that in an older plant? Because we have a big energy consuming plant. So some of these things that the final product is what the customer sees, but it's all the energy and minerals and effort that goes into producing it. So there was a big step by Saint-Gobain investing in a net zero plant, same in glass production, been able to produce net zero glass. And our targets are to be net zero company by 2050. But well before that, that's the ultimate deadline. Everything has to be done by. And some of that will be brand new plants, brand new products, brand new ways of doing things. And some of that will be retrofitting older products and replacing them. And our journey here in Ireland is a kind of a mix of all of those things. So right now at the moment, if we consider, you know, a typical site in Ireland, you can have wasted materials of up to 20%. That's a huge amount of wasted energy, cost, money, carbon, all of the above. So if we can take back some of that waste, recycle it, put it back into a product, that's going to be a huge benefit. And we're right in the middle of that at the moment, whereby we've launched a service where all the plasterboard offcuts, we take them back, we crush it down, we put it back into the product. And that does so many things. Number one, the natural resource that you use, you extend the life of it. You're then bringing back waste, and rather than being a waste and a cost, it's going back into a product again. And then the final environmental product declaration that everyone has to use and say, how good is this product? That reflects it. So that's just one example of something we need to do that, but we need to do that across all the materials in a building, in a house. And I think that's what kind of customers expect. You see, if we all go into the supermarkets, we're going, well, you know, what we used to look just at carbohydrates and fats and sugar content. Now people are kind of, you know, is it organic? Where was it made? What's the packaging made of?
How far did it have to travel to get here? Yeah,
you know, so there's consumers' expectations are very high. So the kind of things we're doing, we need to do. That's what people expect. And that's the journey we're on.
You brought me back to my teenage years. My brothers are plasterers, so I would labour for them during the summer. But when we were cutting, when I was cutting plasterboards, the advice always measure twice, cut once, because wastage around the set was not acceptable.
And you're 100% right. And there's guys who are very regimental. If you have tough control in your site, you're going to have someone saying every millimetre. Don't be wasting any time and money. But it happens. Mm-hmm. It happens. You can have on large sites where a lot of changes within the building results in, well, you did that wall, now you need to do it again, take it down. You know, so these kind of things happen, and the coordination amongst sites to get all the trades working together will help that. But from our point of view, what can we do better? Well, we can supply custom sizes. So if your wall is only 2.6 and you buy a 3 meter board, that's a lot of waste. We can make it 2.6. You know, you're eliminating the waste right at the source.
You're saving my summers.
You'd have no job.
Exactly. I wouldn't have had the shoulders from holding them up, though.
That's true. So you talked about tradespeople there. Like, one of the big challenges we have in the construction industry is the availability of tradespeople, given as the market grows. How are you seeing it from a, you know, drywall and plastering point of view, and you and young people coming into the trades?
It's a massive challenge. There's no getting away from it. Like a lot of the subcontractors we know out there would all say the same thing. Trying to get new people in, get them interested, is a challenge. One big contractor said to me, you know, a few years ago, he said, you know what, you guys, you should push the message out more. I said, what kind of message? If you could just convince the parents that building sites aren't Beirut anymore.
Yeah.
And that he kind of, like, this is the perception of it. And go back to you doing the summer. It is hard work.
Yeah, it is.
But we didn't, 3 weeks ago, we brought in the TY students from Kingscourt in for a couple of weeks just to teach them the basics of the trade. And they loved it. They lapped it up. And it wasn't something that it was on their level of awareness, right? So nowadays, things are much more professional. Going into a construction site, some of them now are high-tech, fingerprint. It's not just clock in. It's like a factory environment. It's much more comfortable setting. But I don't think the awareness is out there around that. So from our point of view, have we to help get more plasterers, dryliners in there? Absolutely, we do. We opened up a technical academy in 2010. We've trained over 10,000 people. We do about 1,500 people a year. Wow. And that's to be there to get the, when a subcontractor takes on new people, that you're able to give them the basic skills, walk them through it, how something is done right on site, which results in less snagging and all the rest, which is a cost-saving measure. So certainly companies such as ourselves and others are doing their bit. Construction industry is doing their bit. But there needs to be more done. And it's often talked about, and I know it's a subject near and dear to you, Patrick, but also kids' choices. Like, there's almost this set view that, you go to college and then, there's different routes. There's different routes, and you can be a plasterer and you can run your own business, and that might suit you, and have five lads working for you, and you might be happy out.
I think it's a very interesting way about going about it, though, and actually showing younger people, because you're right, maybe the generation ahead have a perception of what it was in the past, and that is not the case anymore.
Yeah, and that influences. You know, if you've done hard labour all your life, you're kind of saying, I don't want the same for my young fella, that's what I went through. So if I can, but our job then is to say, no, it's not like that. Like, who do we hire? We're engineers. We need process engineers, lots of engineers, electrical apprentices, you know, and those young people have the potential to change our business, to absolutely change our business, not just because of the skills they have, but new ways of thinking, new ways of doing things. So I think there'd be so much of a benefit to get the fresh impetus, fresh blood into the industry. And there is a lot of effort going into it, but more needs to be done, because go back to the housing crisis, everyone's saying we need more houses, and there's different blockages around that. But one of them will be, well, we don't have the skill set. We don't have all the people to do it. So you might have the money, you might have the land, you remove all these blockages, and then still we're not producing enough houses. And people say, well, we've been saying this for 10 or 20 years ago. So it's all very fine saying it, but that's why companies such as ourselves, the actions, what can we do? So we can do it a bit in our trades around dryliners, plasters, insulating contractors. We can certainly help in that area and are trying to help in that area. But one company on their own will not do enough.
Kieran, it's been a real pleasure having you with us today. Thanks very much for coming and sharing your thoughts on sustainability and products and the industry in general. Thanks, Milan. Great to see you.
Yeah, and thanks very much for having me, lads. And to see a Munster man and Leinster man sitting next to each other is unbelievable. There's a bit of blue behind you, though.
I learned loads about Gyprock.
He's been giving me a couple of digs, just so you know.
I learned loads about Gyprock, but I know this Patrick makes good hires. Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks very much, lads.
Thanks, Kieran. All right.